Welcome to the UAlbany News Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah O'Carroll. I have with me Wonhyung Lee, an assistant professor in the School of Social Welfare. Her research looks at the role of business improvement districts among U.S. cities in addressing social issues. Wonhyung, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Well, from my understanding, your research on business improvement districts, or BIDs, stems back to a dissertation started in Los Angeles around 5 to 6 years ago. So can you share a little bit about what questions you were exploring on the West Coast and what got you interested in this topic from an academic perspective?
Sure. So at that time, I was pursuing a doctorate degree in urban planning. And the research question that I had for my dissertation was about what kind of neighborhoods are successful in forming BIDs. So what was interesting to me was that BIDs were growing in many states and cities. And while BIDs were known to be effective in bringing some positive changes in the areas that they're serving, but not all neighborhoods were forming BIDs. So either there's no attempt to form BIDs, or sometimes they try, but they fail. So that made me wonder, you know, if BID is a good thing, why not all commercial areas would try to have it? So that led me to study deeper about where BIDs exist and where BIDs are not existing, and what makes BIDs to be formed. And at that time, there are about 40 BIDs in LA. And on average, I found that if the area is lower income, or if the areas have a higher percentage of foreign-born populations, then those areas are less likely to have BIDs formed. Which suggests that if this kind of pattern continues, the socioeconomic gap between neighborhoods could grow if no other intervention is made. Right. We can imagine that if one neighborhood has a very well organized BID that provides street cleaning, security, and marketing, and if the other neighborhood does not have a BID, meaning there's no particular self-help type of efforts to make the areas nicely, then the one without the BID might experience, you know, trash issues or street odor. Crime or lack of identity type of issues in the long run.
So it sounds like these problems in the absence of BIDs only seems to make these problems worse, or that they aren't getting the type of resources that a city with a BID would have.
The neighborhoods with the BIDs.
With the neighborhoods, right.
Yes. So then another part of my research then to find out what matters for the BID formation, you know, what makes these things happen. So the areas that did not have BIDs, I learned that some areas actually tried, but they failed. So I selected two low-income immigrant neighborhoods in central LA that are literally adjacent to one another, but one had a BID for the past 10 years, and the other one tried, but didn't form one. So from the comparative study, I learned that in order for a neighborhood to be successful, they really need invested community stakeholders and from the inside a community.
And what do you mean by that?
So oftentimes from the city's perspective, because the BID can play such a big role in making improvements in the area, sometimes the pressure could be imposed from the outside of the neighborhood. So, you know, the city, the mayor or the city councils could say, I think it would be really nice that this neighborhood has a BID.
Okay, so some political influence.
Political influence, yes, I would say. But then if there's no buy-in from the inside, or if there's no organizing power yet from the inside, I think it is very difficult to engage the people who actually have a voting power about whether to form a BID or not.
Okay, and so it sounds like those factors from the outside influence as well as those who will be giving votes to the people in power, that all of that matters in terms of determining whether a BID will be successful or whether it will peter out.
Yes, and for this particular case where there are some socioeconomic challenges and there was no initial organizing power from property or business owners. So for this particular case, the churches of various denominations and schools actually play the big role. The local university play the big role, non-governmental organizations, residents, and activist groups. So in a sense, they're unconventional stakeholders when we think about the business communities. But sometimes these stakeholders who care about where they live, where they shop, I mean, they can also make the bid happen. So that was a one takeaway point from this comparative study.
That's interesting. And so after LA, you switched focus to DC and started looking at bids and homeless populations, whereas before it was mostly at the bids and other neighborhoods. So what made DC a useful city to study homelessness from this research standpoint?
Sure. Actually, I got interested in homelessness while I was still in LA. Just living and working in the central part of LA just, you know, made me encounter homelessness every single day. And it was just surreal, even back then, just from a street corner somewhere around the subway station to a tourist spot in Hollywood or, you know, the more concentrated areas in Skid Row. The homelessness was surreal. The scale amazed me at the beginning, but then maybe because I was studying bids, around multiple districts, I was very intrigued by the fact that the relationship between homeless populations and the business communities could drastically differ from district to district, depending on what kind of bid that they have. So that became the topic that I wanted to study next. And by the time I was already in Albany, and I was looking for some cases where that they can showcase some unique and exemplary approaches to homeless populations. And I knew that some bids in LA and DC were trying some holistic and a little more compassionate way of reaching out to homeless populations.
Through policy or through organizations?
Through their own efforts. So as a bid, you have discretion over your own budget, your program, your philosophy or approaches. So depending on which bid you talk about, they might have a very different approach to homeless populations. So I wanted to find a bid that's trying something different, something that's something that has a more long-term perspective about how to address this issue instead of trying to drive them out of their district.
And were you able to find one, a good example of a compassionate bid that was really doing something to address the homeless population?
So yes, I was aware that there are a couple of cases I could look into in LA and DC. So I was looking for people who could speak with me about that. And that time, the director of the Washington, DC downtown bid kindly welcomed my inquiry and made great efforts for me to be connected to other people in the area, which is a huge blessing to a researcher.
Yes.
So that DC was a very useful site in that regard. It was also a special city because I got introduced to the director of the International Downtown Association there, which is a membership-based organization that connects various types of district management organizations like BIDS in the U.S. and across the world. So I had great collaboration with them in designing and also conducting a survey with BITS in the U.S. about how they're approaching homelessness in their district. So I was able to get the national level insights.
Okay. And can you speak to a little bit of those insights and also what a common dynamic might look like in terms of downtown revitalization efforts and homeless populations? You said that you were looking for good examples of compassionate bids. So does that indicate that perhaps there are less compassionate or just ones that don't really see that as part of their role?
So when we think about the ongoing development trend, what's interesting is that downtowns are becoming a place where both developers and homeless populations, they continually battle for more space. Hmm. Right, when we think about where people, homeless population commonly would go to, many of them are public spaces, mm-hmm. right? Sidewalks, bus stops, storefronts, public parks, and libraries. And these places also overlap with the popular spots in downtown that other people also want to go and hang out. Mm-hmm. These places also have good transportation access, attractions, and naturally it leads to high foot traffic. Mm-hmm. So, you know, from the perspective of property and business owners, of course, they want to create a space that's safe and appealing to their patrons. It's a really important priority. Mm-hmm. So because bids usually represent this side of interest, they are often understood as the forces behind anti-homeless policies or strong-arm measures against the homeless populations.
That they are at odds with one another.
Yeah, I think that's a very popular depiction of the bids.
Okay.
But I think the relationship between bids and homeless population is a very important one because bids are growing in its number and its influence. And as mentioned before, depending on how they decide to approach the homelessness, the experience could be very different from district to district.
Okay. So would you say that your research in DC suggests that we might improve this relationship between the business community and homeless populations, and that that is something that, in fact, BIDS should try to take on?
Yes. So from both my national and local level data that I got, the data that I collected, that really tell us that business communities can seek more fundamental, long-term, holistic solutions mm-hmm. to address homelessness. So more specifically, I can say that some bids, they really took the role of an advocate. You know, when they add their voice to the other human service providers, mm-hmm. you know, we can really frame the issue of, for example, housing first policy. When the bids add their voice to it, they can frame it in a way that, you know, it is a good investment the city can make mm-hmm. instead of presenting it just as a social or political agenda. Mm. And bids also naturally plays a role of mediator, because it's where naturally the private interest meets the public interest. Hmm. So it can really create a space for, you know, business owners or residents, activists, the law enforcement officers. They just come together and just talk about information and share how they can work together.
Hmm.
And lastly, some bids, they also provided some direct services like street outreach and assessment, direct referrals, or some bids also offer actual job opportunities to homeless populations.
Hmm.
So, I mean, these examples just show that bids can play a different role in addressing homeless populations.
And it sounds like what I'm hearing is a philosophy behind these bids saying, okay, if we work on housing for homeless populations, perhaps that will also, hand in hand, help create a more positive environment for tourists and bringing in commerce and young people to rent out the fancy new apartments downtown. So it sounds like those problems, they are trying to see them in a more holistic sense.
Yes, exactly. So I think instead of approaching the homelessness in a way that, well, they're always hanging out in front of my storefront, I'm going to just call a cop mm-hmm. and remove them. But the fact that they can come back this afternoon or tomorrow, I think, you know, it's a meaningful question for them to think about. Are we really thinking why they're here?
Mm-hmm.
And can we do anything collectively to help them in the long run? And like you said, it will eventually help them create the you know, the space where they can attract, you know, foot traffic, shoppers, you know, in the long run as well.
I can see a shop owner saying, well, that's great that you have this approach, but this doesn't solve the problem that someone is sleeping outside of my store. But on the other hand, it sounds like a really neat vision to see this more humanitarian approach.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I'm starting to see a progression with your research into street outreach organizations. So how does this fit into the picture, and what is their role in resolving some of these issues in conjunction with BIDS? And I'm also curious what success looks like and how you might quantify that.
Yeah, so I got interested in this outreach aspect of it because, you know, when I was interviewing some BIDS, they were already doing some of this outreach in their independent effort. So what they're doing is they collaborate with other human service organizations that has clinical expertise. So sometimes they will provide funding to hire them mm-hmm. as part of the BIDS services. Or sometimes the BIDS staff members, they will actually get the training and go out into the street side by side with these human service experts. Hmm. And, you know, they really go out and try to know people's names, stories, and situations. You know, they check in anybody they see on the street on a daily basis. And if they're willing, they also try to connect them with services and eventually housing opportunities. So that non-judgmental relationship building aspect of the approach was very inspiring and very refreshing.
And it sounds like you've been working with local organizations here in Albany and in the Capital Region. Who all have you been working with and collaborating with?
Yeah, so in Albany, I interviewed two organizations to learn about the experiences of street outreach workers. And one was Homeless Action Committee, which is also called HAC, and the other one was St. Anne Institute. And from the connection that I had from my research, I continued to work with HAC for my teaching later on. So in my macro practice in social work, students are required to join their outreach van and observe and participate in the outreach process.
That's really neat.
And oftentimes I think students, you know, also need to share their reflection afterwards. And I think, the experience is very, like, really helped them go out of their comfort zone and bring something very eye-opening.
So in having these discussions in class from students coming in from their street outreach volunteering, what would you say are some of their key takeaways? And do you have any of your own that you'd like to share?
Sure. I think the biggest takeaway for me personally was the way that these outreach workers try to engage the homeless populations one-on-one on a very personal way.
You mentioned names and knowing who they are and their story.
Yeah, and just a simple question, are you hungry? Mm. I think that was the question that really hit my heart very hard.
Yeah.
I think they just care about the human conditions that you mentioned. And they just, first they want to make sure if they're doing okay mm-hmm. Without imposing any expectations or rules or regulations. So that side of approach was very inspiring for me. Students, they share all sorts of reflections when they come back mm-hmm. in person and also in writing. And, you know, it's very rewarding to hear that, you know, before they go out, you know, sometimes they have anxiety or some discomfort, you know, in just trying something like that. But when they come back, I think they really get to see that the human side of the actual people who are, you know, living out in the streets. So, yeah, that's very rewarding.
Well, very cool. Now, taking a step back to include your work in LA and DC and now in Albany, do you have any final thoughts you'd want to share about the role of BIDS in addressing social issues like homelessness? I know every city is unique and each with its own sets of problems and issues, but can you speak to what they can and should be doing, looking to some of these successful models to more equitably revitalize downtown areas?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think the business community often has a bad rep just for being profit-driven and self-interest-driven. But I think as I'm learning from my own research, I think the business community can take a different role. As I mentioned, the advocacy, mediation, and service provision, they're just three roles that I found, you know, that they can use as leverage to make social impact. I'll also just say that, you know, the more long-term perspective that they will have and the more collective perspective that they will have, there's much bigger room for them to work with different sectors like the social profit, the government, the residents, activists. I think there are many stakeholders that the business community actually can work with. And that way, I think they can really make more holistic impact.
Well, very neat. How might other researchers in social welfare build upon this work? And do you have any guidance for social welfare workers who are out in the field to better serve these communities?
Yeah, actually, one of the parts that you asked, and I think we missed it, was the, you know, how to quantify the success of outreach. Mm-hmm. So that was actually a very good question. It is very hard to quantify how successful the street outreach piece, right? Because we can think about, okay, how many IDs this homeless population decided to go and get, or how many doctor's appointments they decided to go in and check. Things like that can be quantified, but there are so many interactions that are significant milestones, but then at the same time hard to quantify.
Right, it's not a number just because they now are in a perhaps better place than they were before with more resources.
Yeah, and also things like, oh, this person smiled at me, or today we got into a longer dialogue. This person seemed to dress warmer today. Things like this actually means huge, significant change, improvement in their behavior. But then it's very hard to quantify. And without that kind of data, it also creates challenges for these organizations to make reports or compete for grants. So thinking about that side of challenge, I think it would be very useful that there's more research about how to quantify and how to understand the process, the outcome of the outreach.
And what about for social welfare workers to better serve these communities?
First, I just want to mention that there are already a lot of social workers who are doing amazing work, who gave me the guidance first for my research. But if there are social workers who find my line of research refreshing, for example, is it really possible to work with the business community? Is there room for for-profit, social-profit collaboration? I really want to say yes, and I want to say the business community can be the partner, and so, you know, you can make the powerful, effective change for people that they serve.
Well, very cool. And what's next for you as a researcher? Are you going to tackle a new city next, hopefully stay in Albany?
Yes, so currently I am in Albany, and I'm working on a research project called Smart and Connected Communities, focusing in Albany. So it's not necessarily on BIDS and homelessness per se, but I'm continuing my study about to understand how people who need services are navigating the services, and how people who provide services can communicate with them better using technology. So I'm hoping to understand the need of homeless populations along with others through that lens. And I recently joined the board of the Central Avenue BID. So from that role, I'm trying to continue my engagement in the community that way.
Wonhyung, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Walbuddy News podcast. I'm your host, Sarah O'Carroll, and that was Wonhyung Lee, an assistant professor in the School of Social Welfare. You can let us know what you thought of the episode or who we should speak to next by emailing us at mediarelations@albany.edu, or you can find us on Twitter @UAlbanyNews.